Philosopher should be an idealist, not a realist. Not content with preserving things in their present state, he should desire to elevate them to the state of the ideal. Government is the science of leadership, the philosophy of administration, the art of reconciling the apparently irreconcilable viewpoints of the many. Of all the sciences, government demands the greatest measure of integrity. A position requiring a superlative quality of integrity and involving the widest sphere of influence should, by every rule of logic, be reserved for the wisest and best fitted. Only that man who is above personal interest is a safe politician. For the citizenry suffers when so-called public servants are the servants of their own desires. Only when the world is ruled by its best balanced intellects can we expect it to be well ruled. We have never had a sufficient number of illumined leaders to permit the smaller nations a proper and adequate form of government. Only by combining into a single people and choosing the wisest of men, regardless of race or creed, to directionalize the activities of the human race, can we approach that philosophic empire which Bacon, profoundly versed in the theory of government, advanced as the true solution of empire. When inferior intellects are chosen to administer governmental destinies, dissension is inevitable in the state. The true philosopher is the bomb ruler of men, though now considered impractical because he lives in a world divorced from personal interest. In reality, the philosopher dwells in the sphere of things as they ought to be, contemplating, as he docks, the eternal verities of the universe. He is peculiarly fitted to ponder the affairs of government, for from such contemplation of eternal verities he has come to realize that if any institution is to endure, it must be patterned after the enduring qualities of the universe. By inserting universal truths into the social structure, the philosopher affects the stabilization of society. The true ends of philosophy are not realized in the spinning of vain theories or fourth-dimensional wool gathering. Philosophy is the pondering of problems, the quest for solutions, the effort to organize life so that by conforming his life to the dictates of rationality. The goal of philosophy. $4.470 lectures on ancient philosophy. Man may come to enjoy the maximum of peace, efficiency, and individual completeness. As each age comes into manifestation, it brings with it a definite philosophic revelation designed to solve the problems peculiar to that age. These revelations are keynotes of thought, and by their aid we bridge the ethical intervals between generations. Racial systems of culture now dead are remembered chiefly for the words of power which they passed on to the civilizations that succeeded them. Through the tangled mystery of time we have wound our way, achieving according to the measure of our understanding. In philosophic history, certain outstanding individuals have come to be regarded as the epitome of vast orders of learning. We regard these individualities as the formers and reformers of doctrines and orders of life. Thus, all the elements of Hindu Brahmanism are gathered into one colossal personality, Manu, the giver of the law. As the embodiment of Egyptian culture, Hermes founded the mysteries of statecraft, giving to the world the doctrines of universal order and procedure. In ancient Greece, the half-myth Ical Orpheus established the cult of beauty, teaching men the gospel of rhythm. Then to Asia came the strong voice of Buddha, calling men to the way of renunciation and the noble eightfold path. Again in Greece, while pondering the science of numbers, Pythagoras revealed God to the world as the great geometrician, bidding men enter upon the mathematical life. Then Socrates, the immortal proletarian, affirmed the necessary to be the greatest good, giving men the gospel of justice. In China, Confucius, the unapotheosized saint and utilitarian of the celestial empire, expounded the worship of the immanent and the service of the now. In Syria, Jesus, the rabbi of the Essenes, preached the gospel of friendship, seeking to unite the diverse interests of mankind in the fellowship of the Spirit. To Arabia, Muhammad, the desired of all nations, holding high the sword of Islam, brought the philosophy of retribution and a righteous destiny. Modern religious and philosophic concepts thus comprise an intricate eclecticism, combining the reconcilable elements of these and various other. The goal of philosophy 471. Revelations. The faith we live by is woven from many threads. We are the sons of the prophets of elder days, and half-hearted. We strive to keep the varied array of their commandments. But, behold, the dawn of a new era is at hand. Humanity has elevated itself in temporal things far above all previous states of power. National strength has become so dominating as to require a code more ample, a revelation more specific. Ascendancy brings with it great responsibility, and the ethical structure of society must be rendered stable if integrity is to be preserved amid the temptations of preeminence. Never before has the lawgiver been faced with a problem involving humanity as a whole. Previous revelations have been addressed, for the most part, to single nations or chosen peoples. The prophet of those days brought that which was necessary for the survival of his own clan and the well-being of that particular order of which he himself was a part. Thus, while each of these messages contains elements of truth that are imperishable, they are not wholly suitable to present needs. For this age we must have a doctrine of synthesis, a code actuated and dominated by the spirit of unification. The supreme need is to blend the diverse interests of men into a common purpose. The philosophy of this age must reveal the interdependence of the Chinaman and the Turk, the white man and the black, the great and the small. In other words, we have need of a common denominator, a fundamental premise upon which all will be agreed, for if we are to establish the government of the philosophic elect, it must be erected upon the foundation of mutual understanding. Today we have one set of laws for men who live in the valleys, and another for those who dwell upon the hills. The diversified interests of a great populace require many representatives to interpret those needs at the seats of government, for the tiller of the soil is a stranger to the captain of industry, and the financier in the environment of his money world little senses those broad impulses animating the souls of poets and philosophers. Humanity has grown to be so strong that it is now dangerous to allow its parts to remain disunited. No longer. 472 Lectures ONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. Can WC maintain our position of isolated individualism without endangering the rights of all men? The old truth that man cannot live by himself alone is still true. The ever increasing strength of the individual confers upon him an ever increasing capacity to injure, and unless the desire to hurt ceases within his own soul, he is capable of infinite destructiveness. The same is true of nations on a grander scale. War has revealed the destructive potentialities resident in aggregations of people. Communities apparently benign and harmless can be metamorphosed overnight into a death-dealing mechanism which, justifying its destructiveness, like the Sedanian phalanx from which it was derived, can move across the face of the virgin earth and leave nothing but shattered hopes and smoldering ruins in its wake. This power to injure, inherent in human nature and now scientifically organized and trained to wreak the fullest measure of evil, is an impending menace against which the race must protect itself. The social structure is infected with the hereditary taint of war, and none is so wise that he can predict at just what point the plague will break out next. In such emergencies, laws are impotent, preachments in vain, and moralizings futile, for intoxicated with the lust for power, men will turn against all that they formerly held dear, and in the name of patriotism march ruthlessly to their own ultimate destruction. When they have loosed the dogs of war, men study Napoleon, not Socrates. When the bloodletting is over and men have turned from the gory altar of Ares, they seek solace not in Caesar's memoirs, but in the words of Jesus or Buddha. But man's forethought always comes behind, for he keeps the power of devastation in his own name and invokes deity only during the reconstruction periods. After the plenitude of destruction has been wrought, a repentant people like naughty children turn to their eternal parent for sympathy. In those more placid moments when our emotions are at rest and the stagnant pools of our desires are left unstirred, we are indeed a noble race, striving for a heavenly crown. But when greed stirs up our bile, we revert to a most barbarous THEGOLOFP Helosoph Y473. And primitive type, eagerly trading our equity in a state of future bliss for a few square leagues of more substantial earth. From all of which it is apparent that as yet no spiritual revelation has come sufficiently strong to successfully withstand the inherent weakness of the flesh. The rewards promised for virtue are so distant and ephemeral that they do not tempt mere sordid men as do the instantaneous compensations which are apparently the rewards of perversion. Centuries must yet pass before the human soul will be sufficiently liberated from the involvements of the material nature to dominate and directionalize the activities of its objective nature. We have come to a day of intensive classifications, of vast industries and corporations, of factional organizations. Each individual is ambitiously striving to become a specialist in some department of the arts, sciences, or professions of living. Each one's goal is to attain a position of familiarity with his subject which will enable him to corner the field and exploit it to his own aggrandizement. It consequently follows that when men simply use each other as means to further their own selfish ends, there must result an ever-decreasing bond of understanding between them, for their selfishness and divergence of interest inevitably segregates and eventually results in utter isolation. Like rays of light pouring from a radiant center, human ITY today is traveling at an incalculable rate towards diversity, limited only by its innate capacity to diverge. A new keynote must consequently be struck, a new word of power sounded, a new message brought which will warn men that in this mad dash toward diversity lies annihilation. That this senseless separateness of interests must ultimately result in a confusion of tongues and the obliteration of all effort. The highest message of yesterday was the message of friendship, an effort to unite men in a common cause. But friendship has proved insufficient as a remedy, for friendship is capable of perversion. The undeveloped man is a natural abuser of privileges and a perverter of issues. Friendship has become the chosen institution of rogues, and thus the power of evil has been strengthened. For when thugs fraternize, the